Whoa, pardon me. Oh, oh, gosh. Oh, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Greetings, Goofsters, and welcome to Episode 9 of the Two Goofs Podcast, the 12-part exploration of the Disneyland character department as told by two best friends who work there. That seems like a lot of numbers to start out the show, doesn't it? Apologies to our left-brain listeners, but let's leave the math in the past and get to know each other. What do you say? First up, he came here to get Goofy and chew bubblegum, and he's all out of bubblegum. It's Jeff.
That is me.
And still pondering the age-old question, to goof or not to goof? I'm Adam. We are back in the saddle again, perhaps dressed as Pecos Goofy, to bring you more behind-the-scenes stories of our time as costume characters, but before we jump into our main topic, we have a new spin on an old segment. It's Goof Mail from the Past! Allow me to explain. Often in costume, a guest will want to give the character a gift. Especially, you know, big dog like Goofy, very important. And for younger guests, it's usually like a drawing or something like that. And I've saved many of those over the years. But adults like to get in on the act as well, especially those visiting from around the world. And I recently found a few of these letters that were passed to me along with gifts that I thought it would be fun to read on the show. You know, who knows? Maybe they're listening now. So I have one that I pass along to Jeff.
So the letter goes, "Dear my Goofy, we came from Japan and we're very glad to meet you today. It was my happiest experience to meet you and spend a good time with you. This is our third visit to Disneyland, but you encourage us with your pleasurable activities every time we are here. We brought you a small present, souvenir of Tokyo Disneyland. It will also be my pleasure if you accept it. As you know, a special event, Disney's Party Express, is held in Tokyo Disneyland to celebrate 100th anniversary of Walt Disney. We will be very happy if you join us. We are looking forward to seeing you there and dancing with you. See you again, always with you, Kazuyoshi Shinada and Ken Fukushima."
So it's pretty nice. I love how, like, they give you an insight into what's going on at Tokyo Disneyland. For example, like, with that letter, I actually got a pair of Tokyo Disney chopsticks that I still have in the package. You know, and I have postcards, stickers, and decals and stuff. So that was always nice when the Japanese guests would come by. I also enjoy the fact that they kept the magic in there, right?
Yeah, and it was really interesting that because that was always the thing for us at Disneyland. Is that if anyone's ever seen clips or photos from Tokyo Disneyland, oh my goodness, like everything we do, they do it 100 times bigger and better. Like it's spectacular, especially the character oriented things. However, I always found the really interesting thing was visitors from Tokyo that would frequent Tokyo Disneyland, the way I heard it described is it was kind of like Santa's helpers, where it's like the Mickey and the Goofy and the whatever at Tokyo. That's not the real Mickey and Goofy. Those are like Mickey's helpers that just kind of show up. But the real Mickey lives at Disneyland. And so there was just this like, yeah, awe and respect that we got from a lot of the, you know, the people that were very, very serious about us being there.
Maybe not the same odd respect we were getting from our American guests. So. All right, so speaking of which now, this was an interesting one that I have here in my hands. I was given this little envelope, and in bright colors, we have Pata Goofy, okay? And it's got a little heart written on it. And so in the envelope, there was a handwritten note by this young lady who wrote it all in Spanish. And then it looks like somebody translated it for her on the back of an itinerary sheet for her tour group. Mm. So this is the letter here. It says, "To Goofy. Goofy, I want to tell you something. I do not know how to speak English, but I will write it in Spanish. How is it that you are in every movie and you have a girlfriend, but I never see her at Disneyland?" Oh, the age-old question. "My name is Claudia Elizabeth Ruzega Rodriguez. I am 11 years old, and I live in her address. Please answer my question. I love you. Your friend, Claudia. But then it goes on. I love you. Heart love. I do not want a picture or anything. I only want you to give it to me in person. I want you to tell me, who is your girlfriend, Goofy? And also, who made you? And who draws you? I also want to meet, and I look forward to your answer. Adios. In parentheses. Goodbye. So, kids, they want to know, and they want to know now. Are you going to answer the question around. Or not? She might be a lawyer now, after all these years. Very good cross-examining a witness. Yep. But yes, that was very, very common, that question about where is your girlfriend from an extremely goofy movie? And how come she never shows up at the park? We had no answers.
Oh, I had plenty of answers. Oh, no, I know the answer. But it's hard to explain the answer sometimes, but I'd write it on a piece of paper or something like that. And here's the actual answer. A lot of people don't like this answer, so we try not to give it a whole lot. Is Goof Troop and the Goofy movie was Goofy playing a character? So technically, Max is not actually Goofy's son. Max is the actor that plays Goofy's son. Now, that's been debated and some people fighting me like, no. But at least while we were working there, that's what we were told is the official reason that you don't see Goofy's girlfriend, is that that's not actually Goofy's girlfriend.
Oh, see? You hear it here, folks. That's how you know. Now, if we could only somehow answer that question about red-nosed Goofy versus black-nosed Goofy. Who was that, a fake Goofy? Who was Junior? All of these things.
Same thing. He was playing a character in those two. Because you notice his name's not Goofy in that.
Yeah,
they don't
it's always
say
Mr.
His
something, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, there it is.
There you go. See? You say there's no answers, and you forget who you're talking to.
But now on to the topic at hand. So last time around, we talked about the exclusive cast member events that the company put on for employees after hours. But this time, we're back on the clock to tell you all about the special events and unique performance opportunities that we had over the years. So this is different than the day-to-day shifts in Toontown or Critter Country. You know, these are one-off events or limited engagements that sometimes even took us out of the park. So it's always fun to mix it up and break through the monotony, I feel like, at any job. So this is definitely going to be a fun conversation. And I think we're going to kick it off with the first segment here called Jeff on Tour. So Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about your show history at the park?
Okay. I feel like this came up when we were talking about either California Adventure or something like that. The kind of peculiar thing about the character department is that we would participate typically in shows, especially shows where you would see a costumed character performing. That was usually the character department. However, it was a very peculiar sort of a thing where we were not technically considered performers, so therefore they couldn't actually have auditions. So it was kind of like, who do you know sort of thing. So for me, especially coming from a theater background, that was my dream. I was like, oh man, I really want to do a show. There was a number of shows that I really aspired to do. And my favorite one was Goofy's Beach Party Bash, debuted in California Adventure. But that was my favorite show. And that was like, if I do nothing else in my career working at Disneyland, I want to do that. And so I specifically asked a lead or a supervisor, hey, how do I get in on this? And they're like, well, they don't really know you, and you haven't really done any other shows. So then there was an opportunity. There was a Monsters, Inc. show, which nobody wanted to do because the Sully costume was horrendous. It was massive. People were getting hurt all the time. The arms themselves weighed 15 pounds each. And I was like, sign me up, man. I'll you know, like, this is my chance. I can do a show.
You're like, I spent a summer at Beast. I could do Sully.
Well, the joke's on me because Beast was a dream compared to Sully. But the sad thing was, and the people that I worked with, and I really made some good friends working on the Monsters, Inc. show, they loved the Monsters, Inc. show. But for me, there was this like, yeah, I'm kind of here for alternate reasons. And so it was definitely the moment that they did finally offer like, hey, would you be interested at all in getting trained to do the Goofy show? I'm like, oh, heck yes, I would. So I didn't do Monsters, Inc. much after that, which was kind of sad. So then, yeah, I finally got to do the Goofy show. And I love that show, so I did that one as often as I could.
What would you say, Jeff, with the Goofy's Beach Party Bash, what was your favorite moment of that show? Which segment did you enjoy the most?
Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, overall, I love that it was Goofy's show. I mean, it's literally called Goofy's Beach Party Bash, that the whole point of the show was Donald was trying to make a movie about Goofy at the beach. So I loved, I'm like, finally, this is Goofy's chance to shine. It's not the Mickey show. It's not the Donald show. It's the Goofy show. And so for me, the funny thing is, especially being not only a performer, but especially the later I got in my acting career, I kind of discovered, for me, I grew up kind of in theater. You read the lines and you're like, and there's the character. Like, this is what you do. Like, what else would you do? And then I kind of started to discover there's a lot that you can do even with the exact same lines. And you can make this character completely different and still legitimately say these lines. So I would like to say that every single performance I did in Goofy was a little bit different, and I drove the directors crazy because they're like, that's not the blocking, you're not supposed, but I knew my timing and I knew how to justify, because you know it's all recorded speech. Some of the Maxes that I was with loved it, and some of the Maxes that I was with absolutely hated it and complained about. But my favorite, there was this climactic scene right before the big dance number. Goofy and Max decide to start a fire to roast marshmallows. And of course, it goes horribly wrong and everything somehow explodes. And then we have to go flying backwards. And so that was, I did that scene 17 different ways. And there, sometimes I was like, and that was even, we would challenge each other sometimes to like, can you do it this way and still make it look good? So like, can you do the entire thing like you're the Beatles crossing Abbey Road? So we tried to do it with like the marching thing, but you got to make it still look like Goofy is doing it and stuff like that. What if you do the whole thing like you're flying? Okay, let's try it like I'm flying, but still look like Goofy doing it. That was good times. Around that same time, or maybe even before, back in like 1996 or something, the princesses were kind of at a slow point in the day, and they decided, hey, what if I sat down and told my story? Why don't I do that? And it became a huge hit. Like, kids would plan for it. They'd come to the park and they'd be like, hey, like Cinderella usually tells a story at this time. So they ended up kind of legitimizing it by moving it inside the toy shop. They actually cleared out a section of the toy shop and they started developing the host to actually be like her partner in crime. So it would be like the host. We called him a storyteller. Princess would tell the story and then the storyteller would be all the characters in the story. So I got trained to do that. And that was a lot of fun, doing a lot of improv. But then all of that led to, they did a big USO tour, and kind of by hook or by crook, I was the probably third or fourth choice, but everybody else couldn't take 2 weeks off, so I got chosen to do this USO tour throughout Midwest and Eastern United States.
So what was the gist of this show for the USO tour?
It was kind of unique because, so one, it wasn't, obviously it wasn't at Disneyland. We were going around to military bases. We went to, actually I've got my little schedule. I dug up my old schedule right here. We went to Norfolk, Virginia, Jacksonville, North Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, Pensacola, Florida, Barksdale, Louisiana, Killeen, Texas, and then Tucson, Arizona was our final stop. And so we went around to all of those military bases and we stayed like in a hotel or somewhere nearby. And then most military bases had like a movie theater. And so what they were doing is for all of the like families of the troops who were away in Afghanistan. So they said that what they were doing is Disney has stopped by to bring the brand new, never before seen Even Stevens movie.
Even Stevens, you say?
Which is a big deal because all these kids were watching Even Stevens. Isn't that, that's the one with Shia LaBeouf in it, wasn't it?
I don't even remember that one, but that was a Disney Channel show.
I'm pretty sure that's where he got his start, is that he was, no, you know what? Because I remember when he did that All My Movies thing and he watched all of his movies straight through. That was his favorite one, was starting off by watching Even Stevens. Anyway, so they brought that out, but before the movie began, what was her name was Toonsie, And she was our, well, here it even says, her bouffant is pink and she wears a cartoon-like 1950s orange shirtwaist dress and carries an orange and pink sparkly purse. She was a person in a spectacular outfit, and she would show up, start off this whole thing, and then all of a sudden the Disney characters would show up. I was the first one as Goofy. Goofy was the first one to kind of come out like he was going to watch the movie, and the kids would just flip out when Disney, because it was like, what? Like, you know, it was a surprise. Nobody knew that, you know, the characters were going to be there. And so that was always a big deal. And so I try and like lead the audience through, like, I'm going to make a movie with you guys. And so that sort of stuff like that. But I dressed up like a director, and so did Donald Duck. So chaos ensues as both Donald and Goofy insist that they're supposed to be the director of the movie, and then Mickey has to say, like, no, why don't we all direct the movie, or whatever the resolution was.
So this is what I'm curious about then, though. So you're gone for 2 weeks on the road, and are you guys traveling by bus? Like, how are you guys getting fed? Like, are you eating on the military bases? Are you stopping for McDonald's along the way? Like, what is life on the road as a costume character like?
Just like most business trips, we got a per diem, so you got a certain amount of money per day for food. It was not nearly enough. It was kind of like, well, I guess I could have macaroni and cheese in my room every night, and then that might be able to cover it. But every now and again, the director would like show up and like take us out to dinner, so that was pretty special. But outside of that, yeah, we'd get like, I don't know, $50 a day or something like that to eat with. I kind of lucked out because as it just turned out, I was the only male in the crew. So I always got my own hotel room. So I was in a room all by myself, whereas the girls all had to share rooms. And then usually, I mean, most of them would be flights. I mean, again, we're going from Orange County to Atlanta, Atlanta to Norfolk. So some of them we would drive and some of them we would fly, just depending on the next stop.
And I mean, did you do any sightseeing or not really?
So Jeannie, who was our coordinator, for one reason or another, wanted to see every single Walmart in every single place that we went to. And the joke is, they're all the same. They're Walmart. But we went to every single Walmart that was out there. We did do some sightseeing here and there, because that was the one thing. What was it, in Savannah? Savannah is known for being the third most haunted city in the United States. So we did go on a ghost tour. And the cool thing was, actually, when we were in Pensacola, Florida, Pensacola is like a big training area for the U.S. Air Force. So stationed there permanently, or their home, are the world famous Blue Angels. So we actually got to meet the Blue Angels in costume, saw them like land and stuff like that. And then I've got a photo somewhere of Goofy, Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Daisy meeting the Blue Angels as they're getting out of their planes.
Wow.
They gave us an autographed lithograph.
Now, had you seen them? Because I know they would come and fly at the air shows near us growing up. Did you ever go to those air shows and see the Blue Angels? And then I guess my other question is, you say you're in Florida, but there was no time to go to Disney World? Pensacola's far away from Orlando.
Yes. We did get to go to the beach, so it's the only time I've been to Florida to actually see the white sand beach. Okay, so this is the most interesting thing for me, is that so that part of Florida borders Arkansas, and apparently there is a local tradition that one time a year, all of the locals in, is it Pensacola or Arkansas? I can't remember which way they do it. They find all the dead possums they can, and they throw them into the other state. So that was kind of my highlight of going to Pensacola. We didn't see it or just heard about it. So
kind of a Springfield versus Shelbyville rivalry there.
Exactly.
That's pretty great. Now, I guess you said that you were the last choice, you know. Nobody else available?
Not last. Come
Throw
on
Jeff
now.
In there. You were not first choice, but was everybody else then on the special events team? Like, that they normally were the ones going out doing this? Or how did the roster work out?
It was kind of one of those, because that's the tough thing too, is that, like you mentioned, Adam, there is a special events team that specifically, that's their job. It is kind of interesting because they kind of only work maybe 2 or 3 days a month. They don't work very often, but they're the ones that go do special events. So something like this comes along. So for a lot of people, like on the special events team, especially if they're used to working, you know, rarely, not everybody can just drop everything and leave for 3 weeks. I mean, like, I couldn't do that today. Although, ironically, at the time, they didn't have a special events Goofy. But the other ones, yeah, two of the special events team, our Mickey and our Minnie, they were able to go. But then the other two, the Donald and the Daisy, they were from people that they knew. And they said, like, hey, you know, so-and-so would be great. And then me, or, well, let me rephrase, Peter, and then I think someone else, and then me.
So this goes into probably my one and only foray into getting to be a part of a special event. And this is called Adam Goes to the Parade. Basically, what you need to understand up front is that the character department is very different from the parade department, although the parades that go through the park always have dozens of characters in them, and you see people in costume performing. Those are not the same characters that are walking around the park and interacting with you and taking pictures and making those memories. These people are a completely separate group of individuals that perform basically twice a day and get out there in costume and do what they do on a float or walking along, however that particular show has been set up. So the idea of a member of the character department actually going over to participate in the parades department is a very, very foreign idea and does not happen often.
Well, because not only that, like you're saying, Adam, because now the shows that I was talking about, like, that was still our department. That was still the character department. The difference would be, like, Fantasmic. And that's a third department, is that Fantasmic was its own thing, is that they didn't even allow crossover into Fantasmic. You were only Fantasmic. Same thing with Parade. They would allow some crossover, but usually, yeah, it's its own separate department, and then we were our third department. So very, very little crossover.
Yeah, so in this case, what happened is I was getting towards the end of a shift one day, and my lead comes in and goes, hey, the Parades department just called, they're good. Goofy just called in sick. They don't have a replacement that can come in. They're going out in an hour. Could you be Goofy in the parade? And I was like, what? You know, because I was aware at this point that this was not something that, you know, happened very often. Plus, they said, and, you know, obviously this is a second shift for you, so we'll be paying you time and a half. I'm like,
There it is.
You're going to give me some more cash, and I get to have a one-of-a-kind experience, I'm in. So it was really interesting, because, yeah, like, they gave me, you know, a minute just to gather up my stuff. They threw me on a shuttle, and they took me over to this area that I didn't even know existed. It was this brand-new staging area, essentially, to me. And it was, when I walked in, it was basically a locker room, and it was huge. But when you think about it, the character department, as we've talked about, are break areas, essentially the same as our changing areas, you know, that we're getting dressed in. So, and they're all very small. So you're used to just being in a cramped area that was thought of after the fact. Oh, we gotta have a place for the characters. And here they had a full locker room. You know, it's like very nice. The only type of treatment we got that, you know, in that vein was at Toontown. But this was like twice the size of Toontown. I mean, this is a big area. And you think about it, the parades, they have like 100 people out at a time participating. Whereas, Jeff, would you say, like, character department wise, in the park at any given time, are there probably like 20 to 25 characters altogether? Plus doubles, you maybe have like 50 people working a day. Is that fairly accurate?
I feel it. Well, especially if you include California Adventure, I feel like that's pretty low. I think there's a lot more than we think. But
especially now, I would say. But back then, I was thinking it was fairly limited.
Right.
So, so they got a lot of people that have to get addressed. And I remember walking in there and talking to one of their leads, because obviously I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how this whole thing worked. And so, you know, the completely separate costuming department and so I'm walking around. I was basically mostly ignored, you know, by the other performers, because they're like, well, we don't know what this guy's here for. So whatever. And so they showed me my costume, and they basically said, all right, so, you know, you need to be here in 15 minutes. We're going to get you onto the float. Now, the difference with this particular parade was called the Parade of Stars. And this is kind of a celebration. I believe it started as like a 45 years of Disney celebration, and it had been running for 5 years at this point. And it was about to end for the 50th anniversary parade. So this had been going on for a while. And so I was on the final float, which featured, you know, the big five, you know, the Fab Five, which, you know, me, so you had Mickey and Minnie and Donald and Goofy and Pluto. And so they were on this wonderfully ornate golden cloud float. And the costumes themselves were a little bit tweaked. Like Goofy's vest looked like it was made of white fluffy clouds. The same with his hat. You know, it's like a big cloud. Yeah. And so what they did, the main difference outside of, you know, that actual style, was that Goofy had a harness that went on underneath your costume, and then there was a little slit in the back, and so you had this harness that would hook on to the float itself. So basically they said, okay, come in over here, just sit down, because each part of the cloud had like these little scalloped out areas where the character would sit, and they hook you in so that you don't fall out while waving and gesticulating and doing all your, as much animating as you could while in a sitting position. So I just remember the excitement of actually getting to be out there and like, oh, we're moving. And obviously we're the last float, so I'm watching all the other floats go on ahead of us. But it was just a totally new experience. So there weren't luckily any mishaps, although I do remember, you know, at a certain points the float kind of stops. There's little starts and stops here and there. So I always was kind of like trying to make up some type of gag or something I could do. It's like, I'm not just going to wave here for 5 minutes, you know, like however long we're stuck, you know, I got to do something. But yeah, that was one of those things where I've always like counted that as a special experience, only because, like I said, that just did not happen often, and it never happened again. You know, it wasn't something I was just right place, right time, but it gave me a view of the other side that I thought was kind of interesting. But I do want to jump back very quickly, because Jeff kind of glossed over his time as a storyteller with the princesses, because you are playing a character. In fact, you're playing many characters, right, Jeff? So right. The first thing I think it's worth saying is the outfit that a storyteller would wear. We were basically dressed like Geppetto, right, from Pinocchio.
Well, we didn't have an outfit. Technically, we were a host, so they just at some point decided that the outfits they wore in New Orleans Square were the ones that they liked. So that's actually the outfit we were wearing.
Oh, I did that. Okay, because basically you had a white puffy shirt, and then you had like a leather kind of apron that went over it with some brown pants and all of that. Yeah, because I always thought it was just kind of an interesting outfit that you would be walking around in when you started doing more of those sets.
Yeah, so, well, and the one thing, which I think we're going to talk about in one of our later episodes, but the interesting thing about the storyteller gig is that the storyteller gig was as close as we got to offending the performers' union. Because that was always that thing, is that Disney was always very careful to make sure that costumed characters and our character department are not performers. Because if we were, the performers' union would say, like, well, then that's a union gig. So for us, this was the line. This was the constant battle that would be fought in the courts or whatever over this position, because we were doing way more than a costume character is justified by doing. Because again, we had lines, we were doing improv, we were doing voices, we were doing characters, we were doing all that sort of stuff like that, which technically should have been a performer. Like when you see the guy that leads like the Aladdin's Oasis show, or like I talked about with Toonzy that was with us on tour, all those people were union people, performers, and we were not. And that was kind of an issue. Now, for us, as the people doing it, like, we loved it because we kind of got to get away with doing more. We weren't paid like performers, but that's another issue.
Now, and the basic setup for that is that, like you said, the kids are all in the toy shop waiting. And, for example, you walk in with Cinderella. And how does that play out?
So the actual functionality of the thing, 7 days a week, we would do three stories a day. We would do, I think it was an 11, 12, and a 1, if I recall. And they had a little sign out in front of Geppetto's toy shop. It only said story about to start. Like, that there wasn't even an advertising or anything like that, which was kind of that, like, let's not tell too many people that we're back here. But it was part of our job to put out the sign before the show started. We put out the sign to say, hey, story time going on, come and join us. So it was kind of underground in some sense of it.
Ooh, underground theater.
I know, yeah. Underground theater. It is a store, so the store's merchandise entrance is backstage. So we would go, or at least the princess would go backstage, and that would be how she would get there. So yeah, the kids wouldn't see her come out and all that sort of stuff like that. In the very back, which is funny because, again, all of this kind of came out of just some character people on their own just saying, like, hey, you know what would be cool? And so because it was literally the little curtain where they would put all of their excess stock, she would hide back there behind this little curtain. And then, you know, the storyteller would come out. He would do kind of like a shtick about, like, good morning, what are you here for? Like, what? You're here for a story? Oh, my goodness. So I would do that whole thing and then introduce the princess, and then she would come out, there would be a chair, then we would kind of start a dialogue about, like, me convincing her or whatever to tell her story to all the kids, and then she would, you know, ask it was very interactive. So, like, do you guys want to hear a story? Yeah. What story do you want to hear? Your story. And, you know, so away we went. Either they would explain, usually that's what it would be, you know, oh, would you help me tell this story and stuff like that. And then sometimes too, like, yeah, in trying to make it very interactive, you know, I would intentionally play a character wrong, and then the kids would have to be like, no, that's not what the beast was like, or whatever. And then my favorite gag was Snow White, because if you know the story of Snow White, you know that she eats the apple, falls asleep, and then Prince Charming comes out and kisses her. And so at this point in the story, you know, we're doing the back and forth. I'm playing all the characters. And then she eats the apple. She's like the only one out there because I'm hiding behind the little curtain. She eats the apple and she falls asleep. Pause. Pause. And then I poke my head out and like, Snow White, Snow White, what's up? Oh, and then I have to like ask the kids, like, she just fell asleep, man. What do I do? And invariably, one of them would yell out, you gotta kiss her. And then all the parents would laugh. And I'm like, wait. So you're telling me now, let me also confess, as an improver, I find one improv and then I do that exact same improv. Ironically, even though I didn't when I was Goofy, but when I'm doing my lines, once I've figured out a joke that works, I'm going to do that exact same joke every single time I do it. So I still remember, what was it? The you've got a kisser. So wait, you're telling me in this story, Snow White falls asleep and then a guy named Jeff shows up and kisses her and she wakes up. No! Or one person would yell yes and everybody else would yell no, it's got to be a prince. And then, okay, what's the prince got to be? He's got to have a cape and he's got to be taller and he's got to have a horse. And they'd throw all kinds of nonsense at me and I'd have to try and figure out how to do as much as I could. And then I'd finally show up and then they'd either like it or they wouldn't. And then I'd lean down to kiss her. And then right as soon as I get close, she would stick her hand right in front of her mouth. So I would kiss her on the hand.
So in this case, though, I'm assuming you would have Snow White, Cinderella, Belle. Did you ever have Aurora, the Sleeping Beauty? Was she there very often?
Aurora was the backup in case anyone was sick. One, Aurora's story is basically the same thing as Snow White. So if we were telling that again, we're like, it's all the same jokes, kids. Like, we're just going to say she's going to fall asleep. I'm going to try and be a prince. Like, it's all the same. I don't know. Her story is kind of boring. So she would be there every now and again. The tough thing is, too, if you've been to Disneyland, and nothing against you gals that play Aurora, like, you do spectacular jobs, but Aurora's known for sleeping. So, like, she would always, she'd have her, like, little blue dress, and people would be like, who is she? Like, no one knew who she was because she's awake, and you don't think of a Sleeping Beauty being awake. So
that would be hilarious, though, if they literally just carted her around on a little bed. You know, like, yeah. And they just, like, here she is, take your picture with Sleeping Beauty.
Right, and it's the same thing. I mean, think about, like, Ariel, if it was Ariel at the end of the movie. So she's just walking around in her, like, white dress, and it's like, who is this? Like, no, you got to see the fish legs. Like, that's the lack of legs. Or so, you know, you go to Disneyland and she's still a mermaid somehow. I think she says that her dad changes her back and forth whenever she wants now.
Hey, fair enough. But yeah, so I always thought that was a great gig because I always felt I was happy for you that you were actually getting to perform out of costume. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew you were aspiring to that. I was like, and Jeff's really good at this. I actually have pictures that I'll post because I got to watch Jeff perform one time with Cinderella. We had some fun backstage too. So yeah, that was a great time. So, you know, as far as other special opportunities that I ever had. I did mention one of these, I believe, in our preview episode of all things. You know, it's a story so nice, I'll tell it twice. Why not? So there was one situation where Goofy was called in to correct a mistake. Goofy was going to patch things up here. And that was with our Magic Music Days program at Disneyland. A lot of high school and elementary school orchestras would come in and they would get to perform at Disneyland, and it's a very exciting trip for everybody. It's a very prestige gig if you're, you know, a 12 to 14 year old. And so one time they had double booked two different groups, so one of the groups was not going to get to perform that day, and so they were just like, oh no, how do we present this information with a little spoonful of sugar, you know, how are we going to help this medicine go down? So what they did was they came to me, very similar to me going to the parade. They basically just came in and said, hey look, here's the situation, would you be willing for the next set, we need you to come over with us to this basically practice area where they would be tuning up and getting ready. And here's your gig. We're going to cover you in cables and you're going to go in there and take the blame. It's all Goofy's fault because Goofy messed it up. And I was like, oh, and you're like, you're going to beg for forgiveness. You got to lay it on thick, you know? So that was basically what happened is they walk me in and at first they don't know what's going on, right? So they're just like, oh, it's Goofy. Yeah, it's great to see you. And then all of a sudden he's like, guys, we have some news. Goofy was getting into our electronic systems and he was trying to help, but he kind of messed some things up and you're not actually going to be able to go out at your scheduled time today. We're so sorry. And Goofy, you're really sorry, aren't you? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, I've been doing crying eyes, you know, I'm on my knees, I'm like begging the kids, you know, I'm like, please forgive Goofy. Everybody's like, oh, we love you, Goofy, it's okay. So basically that was my gig, and I just, you know, thank them all. I'm so excited that everything is okay and we're still friends. And then Goofy wanders out, and you know, it was just nice. I remember the lead saying, oh, great job, you really helped us out there. I don't think I got time and a half for that gig, and I don't think I got any other special recognition, but it was still fun, again, to help the magic stay alive for these kids and them not be wholly disappointed by man in suit letting them know that there is nothing for them to do right now. And the other time that was really fun for me was occasionally you would get to ride a ride with a guest. And so I know I had one special time where I got to ride Gadget's Go Coaster in Toontown with some kids, and that was super fun. I mean, it's just that idea, the kid thinks they're just gonna have a normal ride, and oh, hey, would you like to ride with Goofy? What? You know, and so now Goofy is riding with you. I mean, you can't imagine that, and now it's happening. And of course, Goofy's super freaked out by this roller coaster. He's, oh, cover my eyes, you know, so all that kind of stuff. And also one time I got to ride the rockets in Tomorrowland with a kid, so I thought that was pretty fun too, just going up and down and flying around. I always thought it would have been fun to be somewhere in Fantasyland and ride one of those rides, you know, like Dumbo or Casey Jr. or something, but it's kind of a small area, so I could understand why they wouldn't. But yeah, so those were some fun experiences, again making a magic moment every now and again and getting called in like, we can trust you, you could do this. But Jeff, you know, you mentioned that you were aspiring to be in shows and you eventually found your way into that. Were there any other performance opportunities or, again, special event type opportunities that you were aware of that you always were hoping they were going to call you up and say, hey Jeff, could you help us out this time, bud?
Yeah, I mean, like, the tough part was, and we talked a little bit about this in a previous episode, is that the people that would get pulled to do stuff like that would be the people in what they call non-priority shifts. So it's a shift like Goofy in Town Square, for example. We love having Goofy in Town Square, but if he's needed somewhere else, he doesn't have to be in Town Square. However, if it's like Mickey in Mickey's house at Toontown, like there has to be a Mickey in Mickey's house. Like that's the point of Mickey's house. Like you can't lose, like same thing with Goofy's Kitchen. There has to be a Goofy at Goofy's Kitchen, which again, I was at a lot. So I would not get pulled very often because then they'd have to fill my spot. So it was, they would rather just pull that other person. So that was kind of the downside of taking these high priority shifts. But as far as like aspiring to do a show, it's interesting that it's at the time, and I remember even, not that I had an opportunity, but I remember like not even trying to go for the opportunity. There was a show, which we may have talked about in Frontierland, that was Woody's Roundup. And at the time, I didn't know a whole lot about it. It was kind of like, it wasn't a big, big show like that everybody was talking about. There was kind of a smaller crew that was doing it, not some of the regulars as much. But in hindsight, one, getting to see more and more about Toy Story, because I wasn't a huge Toy Story guy back in those days, but also getting to actually see video of what Woody's Roundup was like. Oh man, like that would have been really, really cool. And again, talking to the people that, all of the people that did that show really loved it. That was their Goofy's Beach Party Bash for them.
Yeah, and I always had hoped, you know, again, this would have been, I would have had to have been in the union to do this show, but in Frontierland as well, there was a hilarious show that they would do just right out in front of the Golden Horseshoe a couple times a day.
Oh, with the cowboys,
yeah, with
or
the mayor and the daughter,
yeah,
and all that, yeah. Laughing stock. It was basically these, you know, Wild West type characters that would come out. There was a mayor, there was a sheriff, there was a guy dressed as the mayor's daughter, you know, so obviously not super attractive because it was a dude with like a 5 o'clock shadow and just wearing a wig and a checkered dress and all this stuff. But it was just hilarious because basically the idea behind it was that the mayor wanted the sheriff to marry his daughter and would like do this competition where if he lost, he'd have to marry her and all this stuff. And they were just super hilarious that when we would break in Frontierland, like they had their own separate break area, but I would always see them going back and forth. I was like, guys, great show today. You know, like, because it was semi-improvised because they would pull in guests to be part of the competitions and all these things. And, you know, they would feed the guest lines to insult the daughter, you know, about how ugly she was and all this stuff. So anyway, that was one, like, if I could have gotten into laughing stock, I would have been a happy guy. But there was another one that I heard about when the live action Eddie Murphy movie Haunted Mansion came out, you know, ill-advised. I don't know that anybody enjoyed that particular film. But at the time, as a part of the promotional side of that, they actually had the hitchhiking ghosts. So that trio of ghosts you see that appear in your Doom buggy at the very end of the ride, they had people in those costumes that would actually go to specific spots that the marketing department did to promote the film in a way that's extra fun for people. And so I remember being in a break room and somebody who had been one of those ghosts was showing me their photos and how they would, like, again, just like go off on the side of a road and set up a sign that said beware of hitchhiking ghosts and things like that. You set up characters in the middle of a street or whatever and see how people react. Again, that's kind of a rare thing for a character to not be in the park, or if they're out of the park, like in Jeff's case, be in a show. So to be something of an atmosphere character beyond the berm, as we would say, like in the real world, is kind of a cool opportunity for those who got to actually do that. Like I say, the character department has so many different facets, and I love the idea, just like Jeff was saying with the storytellers, that, and even if you go back to our Goofy's Kitchen episode, if characters were inventive enough and they came up with something that the powers that be weren't paying 100% attention to what was going on, but it was working, it can become a real thing. And so I think that's a nice thing that I hope continues in the park to this day, just letting that creativity flow and perhaps you come up with some gold.
Well, and I think that's kind of one of the sad parts about, and it's just kind of the natural reality of, I think, where the department is right now. And it was even the same thing, like when I would hear the stories about what it was like in the 90s or in the 80s, when there was only about 150 people in the entire department, it was even crazier, where there, it was just kind of like, we're all on the same page, so there's a lot of like leeway and stuff like that. And it felt like, yeah, there's not that there's not room for creativity, but it is that one thing for me that it's, that would always drive me crazy, is that I certainly can understand how the monotony of it can kind of get to you. But like, yeah, there's still always going to be opportunities for creativity, even if like, hey, the way it is now, you can't just wander wherever you want. You can't, you have to stand right here and you have to be here for this long to take photos and stuff like that. You can still be creative even in those constraints, I think.
Yeah, and so ultimately the guests are being given what they want and they're getting a special experience. Either way, we do what we do so that the guests can walk away and say, that was totally worth the price of admission. For all the rides I rode today, for everything else, you know, I got to meet Goofy, I got to meet Captain Hook, I got to meet Queen of Hearts, whoever it is, and it made my day because they made me feel special. So, next time around, we are gonna get real. You know, 10 episodes. When we get to number 10, I think it's time that we get some straight talk. We're going to be discussing the concept of to career or not to career. Can you make a career out of working as a costume character at Disneyland? What are the considerations that go into that? How do you weigh the pros and cons? And what ultimately led to our own decisions to move on from the character department? And there are some very interesting stories. So you talk about underground, you know, with the storyteller position. Jeff took some other things underground. And so we are going to get into those stories next time around. And I think you'll be very interested to hear this different side of the Disneyland character department for sure. And so until next time, yuck. Bye.
Wow, that was an ominous ending.
Hey, you gotta hook
we
up.
We definitely took some things underground. Oh my gosh.